This is Peter Day's World of Business. I'm Peter Day, and in this week's download edition of In Business from BBC Radio 4, a second report from the producer Charlotte MacDonald and I from a country awakening to the outside world after decades of seeming isolation. A prayer bell at the most famous landmark in Myanmar, the huge, shining Shwedagon Pagoda in Yangon, an ancient place in a city poised for great big 21st century social, political and commercial changes, as we heard last week. We'll hear more about them in this programme. But almost three-quarters of the population of Myanmar lives in the countryside, where life is hard and poor and change comes slowly. But it is happening, and as in many developing countries, one of the agents of change is microlending. We're braving the monsoon deluge to go quite a long way out of Yangon to the Irrawaddy Delta area to see how microloans are used. Lending in this area is organised by PACT, an international charity which has been operating microfinance schemes in Myanmar for 14 years. This is a recent new scheme funded by official UK aid. I'm on my way to the village, and normally we'd go by road, but this is the rainy season, so we've had to take a boat. And very rainy it is. You can see why they grow rice here. This is a village about 3 hours' drive west of Yangon, and the houses are made of wood with woven walls and mat roofs. It's a village of houses on stilts because it's so wet here, and gathered here today about 100 women repaying on a fortnightly basis a little bit of their microloan.
My name is John Mohane from PEG, Global Microfinance Fund Institute.
How long has this been running?
In this village, we started microfinance activity in 2013.
And how's it going?
It's going very well, and almost all the borrowers are enjoying their second-year loans.
So they take out a loan for the first year, repay it on a fortnightly basis, and then they've repaid enough, plus 30% interest, and then they are embarking on taking a larger loan this year.
Yes, our borrowers successfully repaid their loan outstanding.
All of them, 100% repayment record.
100% repayment.
Now, these are all women. That's pretty much the norm for micro-lending.
We are encouraging more women participation in our programs.
And what do they use the loans for?
According to Myanmar culture, the household leader is the father of this household, and he and the main family income. By lending microloans to the wives of the household, they can do the new business such as livestock pig raising.
A round table here and people sitting on the floor. And now, actually, the money is being dished out. This is a disbursement meeting, so they come in groups, they've arranged a loan, and here it comes. I can't see quite how much, but the name is on one side of the piece of paper, the amount and the date is on the other, and here is microfinance in action.
My name is Doi Yin Tui.
Have you just got a new loan?
Okay.
Yes.
How much for?
Nothing.
I mean $200 around.
What are you going to use it for?
I will use this money to buy seeds and prepare the land for planting. I got my first loan from PEC last year. I bought 3,000 sugarcane plants and made sugarcane juice. I've left some of those plants in my garden so I can continue that business. I've worked out that my income has increased by 65%.
That's very impressive. That's very worthwhile.
Before the microfinance charity came to this village, I had to get money from the local money lenders who charge high interest rates, and I wouldn't receive the money in time for planting.
There are big changes going on in Myanmar. Do you notice them here in the village?
I don't notice the changes at the national level, but in the village, the religious buildings and the school are being renovated. This is because people in the village have more money to pay for these things.
This is a village shop, and here's the owner sitting cross-legged on the wooden floor of the shop.
Her name is Ni Ong San.
How long have you been running the shop?
I started the business last year. I sell snacks, groceries, gasoline, and diesel oil. I started the business with a microloan. I got $80 the first time and $150 the second time to buy stock. I didn't have experience of running a shop before, but I thought it would be profitable. I got the idea from the loan application form.
What's your daily routine like? What time do you get up and work?
I get up at 4 a.m. and cook for the family. Most of my time is spent selling items in the shop and taking care of my son. In the evening, I cook for everyone. The money I make complements the family's income, most of which comes from farming.
Good growing weather for a crop I've never seen before, beetle leaves, chewed, of course, all over Asia. Here's the grower. She's a microfinance borrower, is she?
Yes, she is our borrower, and her name is... Our name is Nini U.
Okay, what have you used your micro loan for?
I got a loan of $150 to buy small beetle plants. Before starting this business, I used to grow rice. Growing beetle leaves is more profitable.
And then there's a lot of picking to be done. How are you going to pick them all?
I get 10 laborers to spend 10 to 12 hours plucking and packing the leaves. The plants are plucked every 15 days. The leaves are sent to Yangon to be sold. If all goes well, I will make double the money I invested.
Tough lives and enterprising ones in a very rainy village in the Irrawaddy Delta. A potent reminder that most Myanmar people live in the countryside. But back in the commercial capital, Yangon, a very different experience, one of a growing number of people who decided to return to Myanmar when they saw signs that the country was beginning to open up. Melvin Pun is chief executive of the family company SPA Myanmar. Like so many Asian businesses, it's a family-run conglomerate. SPA was started by Melvin's father, Serge Pun. Serge Pun is still chairman, while his son Melvin is CEO. How do I think about you as what the South Koreans call a chaebol?
Our company?
Yes. We are a family firm with fingers in a lot of pies, in other words.
We are a diversified business conglomerate, that's right.
Based on property in the first place?
Our two biggest businesses are properties and banking, but we've expanded to other things in the meantime.
What's the logic of that?
When we live here, we see a lot of shortage of services. You know, everything from hotel rooms to car services to service apartments. You know, it's quite easy to identify needs and just fill those needs. So that's how the business grew.
Melvin Pun was educated in Britain, but then he became a banker in Hong Kong. He worked for Goldman Sachs for 12 years. But then signs emerged that Myanmar was about to see big social and political and business changes, and Melvin Pun decided to become a returnee, a repat.
I did not expect to come back. There were a few events that really moved me. I think I would really regret it if I had just played it safe and just lived in Hong Kong, had my cushy banking job.
What was the key moment for you? Oh, we can start expanding. Oh, modern times are arriving. What did it feel like?
Well, I have to say personally, it was when I walked down the street and I started seeing people selling T-shirts of Aung San Suu Kyi and then singing songs about Aung San Suu Kyi. It's quite amazing. You know, 10 years ago, maybe even 5 years ago, you walk down the street, you wouldn't speak freely. You know, you'll be somewhat concerned back of your mind that someone's listening to you. And for people to be so vocal about the opposition leader, I think that's a very significant moment.
The Myanmar economy is still very much in the hands of the big conglomerates who flourished under military rule. That's going to change, says Melvin Pun.
I would imagine in the next 10 years, a lot of entrepreneurs would start businesses. And frankly, the largest businesses in a decade's time will be unlikely to be the existing top 10 businesses. We're very lucky. We actually have very good people in Myanmar. We have people who are very well educated, who've done very well overseas. And we see a wave of them coming back. And they hopefully would engineer new companies and new opportunities for the future.
This is a signal moment for any developing country when exiles come back after years of study and working abroad. Let's hear from another of them, Ney. He started his own business rather than being born into a big family firm.
My name is Ney Ong. I am actually 34. I was out of the country for about 16, 17 years.
Ney left Myanmar to study. He ended up in Silicon Valley, California. First, he worked at a startup that was bought by Yahoo. Then he spent 4 years at Google. And then he decided that the opening up of his own country offered real potential. So he came back to use his technology expertise to start his own online travel business. Hard work.
The first 2 years, I did not think that I was going to survive. The first year was very difficult. So when I got here, I wanted to start an internet company. Not only there was no internet, there was a little supply of electricity.
The electric supply went down all the time.
It was not existent almost. Yeah, so I wanted to get an office, but I think there's only one place in the city where you have a good supply of internet and electricity. I went there, and then I was waitlisted to get an office. I was waitlisted number 42. So I was staying at a hotel for 6 months, and at the back of this hotel, there's this coffee shop where you have a really good connection, and then it's happened to be managed by a son of a minister. And so I went there every day from 7 in the morning until like really late, every single day, because all my engineers are in India. So what they did is that they reserved a table for me.
Why start an online travel company, I wonder? Ney has a very precise answer.
In the United States, 1 out of 2 people use internet to book something online. In Europe, that number is 1 out of 3. In Asia, that number is 1 out of 6. In Latin America, that number is 1 out of 8. So in Myanmar, that number is not existent right now.
And that says to you, opportunity, opportunity.
So I focus on two things. First, I look at the travel industry. Myanmar has about 2 billion a year. If you look at Thailand has about 24 million tourists coming in every year. Myanmar at that time is about 1 million at that time. Now, in the past 2 years, each year it has grown 92%. So our company has grown in the past year about 700%. On average, the travel industry at this point in time has grown 5 times more than the natural rate of the economy.
Alongside Ney, another high-tech entrepreneur who stayed at home. 26-year-old Tu didn't go abroad for further education. He went to Yangon's University of Computer Studies, where he found the style of learning very traditional and frustrating.
In Myanmar, the culture is that, like, you know, you've given a big book of, you know, software engineer, you have to memorize it and then write all down and you will get A+ or something. I didn't do that. I didn't do parrot learning, but
Solving problems, do you?
Yeah, I like to, you know, I solve all the problems in the book instead of memorizing them. So,
exactly. To get ahead, you need to educate yourself abroad. Why did you stay behind then?
Well, I saw a lot of opportunity here, and I didn't want to wait.
So, while he was in his second year of university, Tu started up his own company, creating everything from mobile apps to a car navigation system. His focus is on making products in the Burmese language.
You know, you watch a lot of, you know, Western movies. Everybody is using phones and in their native language. So I see the requirement that everybody in Myanmar need that kind of technology or that kind of thing in the near future.
That's you then saw it in terms of, there's going to be this need, and I can do something about it. And you were extremely young when you saw this need. I find that connection extremely interesting. Can you find the people you need to employ here? You go, he goes to India for his software development. Can you get the people you want here?
What I did is quite interesting because, you know, whenever a young person is graduated from university, they wanted to go abroad. So what we do is we
hire those kind of people. We're trying to educate them. We're actually trying to help them go abroad to study or to work. Then we have a very good link with them when they are gone abroad. And whenever we have a tough project to go on, we ask them for the help. We actually also the software to Singapore and Malaysia and US.
But you trained your own outsourcers.
Exactly, yeah.
Clever stuff. New business model, perhaps.
Yeah, new business model, perhaps.
But despite the enthusiasm of the new entrepreneurs, isn't most Myanmar business still very firmly in the hands of an entrenched establishment? Back to the returnee travel entrepreneur, Ney.
So I decided to focus on some market that do not necessarily have to do with the government, or I wouldn't come back to the country just to bid on a license or something like that. That would be too risky for me. For small businesses to thrive, I think access to capital is very important. Access to affordable loans, is very important. I think you cannot overemphasize enough that, entrepreneurial needs to be encouraged.
It's quite risky here because, you need a lot of cash. And there is no infrastructure like, venture capitals or angels, whatever, here in 6 years. So what we have to rely on is loan sharks,
Loan sharks, people lending you money at huge rates of interest.
Huge rates of interest.
What do you pay for your money?
Well, sometimes, a big portion of our profits. Sometimes, we have to sell out some of the older stuff we made.
You're paying 50% on a loan, something like that?
That much like 40%, 50%.
Credit card sort of interest rates, yes?
Exactly, yeah.
The hope and caution of two young tech entrepreneurs. Money for investment is a real difficulty in Myanmar with its still extremely limited banking system. Let's go to a bank to find out why. Hello.
Yeah, hi.
This is the Tun Foundation Bank in the business district of Yangon, and here's Joe Barker Bennett. He's British by nationality, but he spent most of his career working for banks in Asia, including HSBC. He's now working as a consultant to this local Myanmar bank to help it modernise. In the traditional banking hall, a handful of tellers greet their customers across a large desk. Yes, there are now computers in some parts of the office, but there's also a great big ledger on one of the tables.
Changes are about to come at the end of the year in terms of what we're doing here. So we have our international department, foreign exchange, remittances, trade services. This actually still runs off manual ledgers, which you can see there. When we have our computerization at the end of the year, all that goes into the computer.
This is banking of a kind that used to be done like this in Europe and America 50 years ago?
I would guess so, yeah. I mean, conversations I've had with some people coming in from Sri Lanka, Indonesia and Malaysia, when I describe how we bank, they say, oh, that's what we did 20 years ago or 30 years ago. So it's very much, it's an older way of doing banking.
So you've got an interesting job on your hands, changing this, bringing this up to date.
Yes, correct.
Let's go to your office upstairs and talk more about this. Upstairs, Joe Barker-Bennett fills me in on the history of banking here and why it's still so rudimentary.
After independence, around the late 1950s, they nationalised everything. So effectively, through that time period, it was all government banks until the beginning of the 90s when they started issuing some private banking licences. But the banks were tiny. I mean, I think the capital when this bank was set up was a few thousand dollars.
Token private banking.
Token private banking, and that was generally the case. I mean, there wasn't a great deal of reason to invest in it, for starters, because everything was restricted. You couldn't deal in foreign exchange, what the products you could do. So really it was almost more moving money around the country, and then some loans was what banks were doing. When Aung San Suu Kyi was released and the sanctions were scaled back, at that point the banks were starting to invest in technology. So we're going from basically manual ledgers as of 3 years ago to now having the most modern state-of-the-art computer systems that you get in banking. I mean, if you go into Thailand, their computer systems are 25 years old. We'll have modern, up-to-date stuff, and it's fairly straightforward to put in, particularly when we've got as basic a banking as we've got here.
Banking and the transfer of money is an absolutely vital national resource, and Myanmar's economy is still based on cash transactions. Less than 5% of the population is said to have a bank account, and across the country there are few ATMs. Services are limited and basic. the authorities still impose tight restrictions on the interest a bank can charge and the loans it can offer. There are very few credit cards or mortgages. Financial change is in the air, but there's a lot to do.
See, at the moment, if you look at your average company, the amount of time they spend managing their cash is huge. Well, the payroll is all paid in cash. All their bills are paid in cash. So you end up with huge trucks of cash moving around, and it's not in the banking system, and you're spending time. So at the end of next year, the central bank is talking about an online payment system between the banks. And when that happens, I suspect shortly afterwards, the volumes of cash that we see running around banks at the moment and trucks rolling up outside with rice sacks depositing cash will gradually disappear.
One of the very big problems for businesses looking to start or expand is the restriction on bank lending. Banks aren't allowed to make unsecured loans, so would-be borrowers need property, and they can't borrow more than 50% of the value of their asset.
If you're an entrepreneur and you've got a good idea, you need to raise money. You can't go to the banks to raise money because you haven't got the assets to put up.
The physical property assets, two times what you want to borrow.
Yeah. And so you're forced either to go to the loan shark or you are forced to go to one of the tycoons to get funding. And in the process, you actually lose control of the business. So
that would be called angel investment in other countries. But here, the deal is that you are become part of the tycoon's empire, do you?
Yes, correct. That's effectively it. So a lot of it's down to the regulations. If they could change the regulations to allow us as a bank, free up interest rates, be able to lend money on an unsecured basis, price for risk, do proper risk assessments, it would be a great way of pushing it. But at the moment, the way the regulations are, is forcing people into the hands of the loan sharks.
So you're beefing on about this to the authorities, presumably. You want the regulations to change. Are you talking to people who understand this?
Well, I think there's a reluctance to make decisions, and I think the whole decision-making process takes time. As someone once said to me when I first came here, there are three keys to success in business in Myanmar. Patience, patience, and more patience.
Joe Barker-Bennett, a consultant to the Tun Foundation Bank in Yangon. If it's really hard for a business to get conventional loans, then other methods of getting started seem to be springing up.
Hello.
This is Myanmar's first startup incubator, a hub of desks and networking created to nurture new ideas and new businesses.
My name is Pete Sylvester, the co-founder of Project Hub Yangon. I'm Australian. My partner and co-founder is American. We washed up on these shores about 2 years ago.
And what did you find when you arrived here?
Well, I mean, if Silicon Valley is the jungle, this was the desert. Yeah, we felt like there was nothing here really supporting entrepreneurs.
What can you support them with here at the Hub?
Getting money to seed your business and to reach scale is important, and so far there are very limited opportunities for that. But apart from money, the sort of basic sort of training about business acumen that we try to provide here, having mentors and a peer group of other entrepreneurs, I think is super helpful. And these are some of our entrepreneurs.
And I can't but notice that they're all women.
They're all women, yes.
And that's deliberate.
We thought that we'd run an incubation program specifically for Myanmar women.
That's a noticeable deficit. Is it women entrepreneurs?
In every startup environment, there's a great amount of male dominance, even in Silicon Valley. We feel like the pressures and the expectations placed upon Burmese women are quite specific. To toe the line in going into either paid employment or looking after the family means that there's less freedom to make the choice of starting a business. And we feel like creating an environment specifically for Myanmar women would really help that.
Right, okay, now introduce me. Hello, you are?
Hi, I'm Hilary.
And what are you trying to do?
I'm starting a women's ready-to-wear clothing line here in Yangon. I'm targeting professional women from age from 20 to 40. So Burmese-style clothing is coming back into fashion. I'm doing my market research now, and what I found is that there's no brand here yet in Myanmar that serves the needs of the Myanmar woman here well enough yet.
And that's what you want to do? Yeah. You want to produce a brand?
Yeah.
Sewn into every garment?
Yeah, I was thinking of entering the workforce in the U.S., where I studied, but I decided that since things are changing here as well, and it's getting increasingly difficult to find a job in the U.S., so yeah, I took that opportunity to come back to Myanmar, started working for my dad, and I found that like I should also try to build something myself.
Do you need the sort of things that you can learn at the hub?
It helps me structure my business idea into plans and set goals for myself every week and every month, make sure that my plans and ideas like progress into reality. Yeah.
Who's funding this? Where's the money coming from? You need to invest, you need to buy materials, you need to employ people to make them. Who pays?
Currently, my parents. But I'm hoping to get more funding and investment from the investors. Yeah.
You are?
Hi.
Hello.
I'm May. Yeah. I'm a software engineer. Yeah, I'm working here.
Ah, you're more of the kind of person I met in Berlin or London or Silicon Valley, a software engineer. Are there many women software engineers in Myanmar?
Yeah, there are as many as men.
That's quite unusual in other places, isn't it?
Yeah, it's true.
Where did you learn software?
I learned locally here, yeah.
And now you want to do something with your expertise. What is it?
I'm going to build a website that provides daily deals to the people in Yangon.
Oh, a sort of Groupon for Yangon.
True, true. For the past years, it is impossible to penetrate the online market, but now it is time. It is the right time.
Very exciting.
Yeah. At first, I start to develop the restaurant directory. So I discussed with the hub people, and they advised me to change to the Groupon thing like that. So
give people a reason for looking at the restaurant directory because it's got offers attached to it.
Yeah.
There's someone else here, an American woman working for a Norwegian aid organization, and very enthusiastic about it too.
So I'm Barbara Bauer, and I'm the executive director for a Norwegian social enterprise fund, and this social enterprise fund is what is supporting this project. Where else in any century would you have the opportunity to be in a country that is reinventing itself?
That's what it feels like, is it?
How could you not be here? There's so much excitement going on. I wouldn't be anywhere else.
Great expectations, but the female entrepreneurs at the hub are city dwellers, they're educated, they're English speaking. They're a long way from the hard-working village women we heard at the start of this program. But the changes Myanmar has embarked on, the ones they're all taking part in, can only happen once in a lifetime.